impact is at the heart of many businesses, and at the moment, companies and brands across a range of industries are working hard to help us measure the impact of our decisions and purchases. From consumer goods to B2B, there is a lot of momentum in showing us the damage being done to our planet and the progress that can be made through design, innovation, new materials, and processes, not to mention better decisions. But it's the thinkers outside of the commercial space who are leading the way on really tackling the problems we face and showing us how business can truly be impactful. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. This week on the show, we meet Cyril Gutsch, the founder of Parley for the Oceans. Cyril is a German-born designer and entrepreneur who started Parley in 2012 as a forum for creative industries to discuss and work together on protecting and cleaning up our natural world. In particular, Parley exists to address major threats towards marine ecosystems by providing the space and resources for creators and thinkers to raise awareness against ocean plastic pollution. And you may have heard of Parley through one of their incredible partnerships to combat pollution, including with Adidas, Anheuser-Busch InBev, American Express, and the United Nations. Here's my conversation now with Cyril, who spoke to me from New York City with the story of Parley for the Oceans.
Parley for the Oceans is a collaboration network, really. It's all about connecting creators, thinkers, and leaders with the beauty and the fragility of the oceans, really, and showing them that we cannot afford anymore to continue business as usual. We have to pretty much end this age of destruction that we created. When you're looking at all the environmental issues today that we are facing, then it brings you always back to economy. It brings you back to materials we use, products we make, how we use and discard them. And as a designer, as a creative, I'm not there to point fingers. I'm not about blaming and shaming the industry. It's more about thinking, how can we innovate all that? Industry, in a lot of cases, works with very old supply chains and with standards that had been established decades ago. And these materials that we're using, be it fossil fuel based, be it based on chemicals that are quite harmful if you look at them, then you come to the assumption that we are entering a chapter which we call the material revolution, where we have to let go of all these old and harmful substances, these old business practices, and this old idea that a business has to be exploitative and leadership has to be cruel in order to be successful. In the future, we are talking about being collaborative, owning the effects, the impact of your company, owning products, even if you sold them already, owning them in a sense of feeling responsible that this item that you're making, that you're selling, is not leading towards destruction of our planet. Because that's what all the old stuff that we're using today is pretty much doing. It's based on this idea of, like, you can take whatever you want and you can throw it away when you don't need it anymore. Unfortunately, there are not enough resources to take and take and take. So Parley encourages and inspires people, empowers them really to rethink the old and pilot the new. Think about new product models. Think about new materials. Support such projects and test them in real life. Put them out there in the market and see what's happening. Is there a demand? Are people jumping on it? Are they refusing to change their habits? Is the consumer ready for it? And all this paired with art, science, design, entrepreneurs, and finding together at a round table to make peace really with the oceans and entering an era that is truly based on collaboration between mankind and nature.
That's absolutely fascinating, and so much in there I would love to get into. But first, can you just tell us a little bit about how you bring those things into the real world?
So Parley, when it comes down to what we do as an organization, there are like three pillars really. One is communication and education. One is direct impact, being out there saving lives, saving wildlife, really, against the impact of plastic pollution, against poachers, even against like global warming issues. But then there is the third part, which is research and development, looking at all these old materials we're using, analyzing them, and looking towards the future and looking towards new technologies, biofabrication, green chemistry. But also, what role does digital have to play? How can we actually learn fast enough about these materials that we are using, fast enough about the negative impact, but also opportunities to heal the damage that we have done? Because today, we are already in the sixth mass extinction event. That means we're killing life in a rapid speed. And these species that are often even unexplored and unknown to us, down there in the deep sea or in forests, they are diminishing in rapid speed. It's a very deadly spiral that we're in. Because if you continue on that path of consciously or unconsciously destroying this blue planet we're living on, then at some point, A, we will not really have the planet anymore that we knew. We will not have that life that we so love. And on the other hand, there will be a due date also to our own species. We can't live on a dead planet. We can't live on a planet without the crew that is running it. And that is pretty much all this natural life out there. So we are in this moment in time where we have to make strong decisions. And we find that the creative community, with its designers, with its artists, with its scientists, we pretty much have to own that movement. We have to own that cause, because we're the ones who are responsible for the ideas in the first place, to create new technologies, to make them known and public, to make them sexy and hot, to design products. You know, that's in our hands. And business commissions us. Business exploits and commercializes, and industry is optimizing supply chains and sales and all of that around these ideas. So why would we not say it's not up to the industry, it's not up to the consumer? It's pretty much has to start with the creative. We have to seduce the world with new technologies, with eco-innovation, with like making it hot and sexy to look towards nature and learn from a nature that has been here millions of years before we even arrived as a species, before we were even able to live in the chemistry that this planet provides. So we find that it is our role as creators really to reinvent, recreate, redesign, and not in a sad way, not like in this like, oh, we have to go back in time and oh my God, we are all so bad and guilty and let's feel ashamed. Let's have this mutual experience of like self-blaming. No, that's not what motivates us. We humans are motivated always by impossible problems, by visions and aggressive ideas, by fantasies, and by tomorrow, really. We are intrigued by forming the next day, the next year, the next decade with our ideas. And therefore, we want to jump into the future. And sustainability, the name itself, is not inspiring this. It pretty much says, don't do anything, don't be harm, don't move, don't rethink. It's like not an encouragement, it's not a battle shout. But innovation is. And the idea of like, oh, there were people that created standards in the first place. There were some people that had good intention and they created the plastic bag and they started burning fossil fuel and they came up with like a car. These weren't monsters, these were inventors that in that specific period of time made a lot of sense. And now it's time to rethink that and to question these standards that look so overwhelming manifested and question them and say, probably it's time that I step up as a creator and have the courage to come up with something new.
You know, so much to unpack there, and I would love to dig into some of the innovation you talk about, specifically in the partnerships that you have done to raise awareness about your work. But just to start, it sounds like what you're setting up is the idea that to have sort of progress and, you know, growth in economics and in companies and things, there is always this trade-off, I think, that you're talking about. And now it's so interesting you use the word sustainability, one that comes up all the time now from companies big to small. I've heard you say that word is a little bit boring because also we need innovation, which is exactly what you talk about. But the interesting thing now, I guess, in that progress and in trying to create wealth and success, however you want to define that, all these companies are involved now. And that may have changed a little bit since you first got started, I think. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and how that sort of changed the game in the last 8 years since you got started?
Yeah, when we started Palais and we were just jumping out of our previous role of running a design firm, me and my partner Leah, and we decided that it's time now to really be responsible and use our skills to drive society to a next chapter, really. People thought we're crazy. We are like tree huggers or something, you know? And they couldn't believe it. But in these 8 years, a lot happened. I mean, of course, we also campaigned a lot. And we didn't do it in the traditional way of taking an outsider position of society and throwing stones and putting up signs. We actually went into the engine room, like into the epicenter, into the core, by forming alliances with like big polluters, big brands, big industry, countries, labs, and a network really we formed out of like people that you wouldn't consider environmentalists at first sight, you know? And we approached it more as an innovation topic instead of speaking about morale, you know, and speaking about like homework that we have to do. And I think that was the different narrative that we picked. It was more one of like inspiration, vision, instead of like shame and guilt. And that was where the environmental movement until then was pretty much based on. Like, oh, you're bad people. Oh, and then often like demonizing capitalism right away and trying to kind of discuss new systems for society. And I think that's something we totally didn't do. We are not political at all. We are like looking at this from a pure design and technology point of view. And we are saying, this is old technology that we're using. The problem is based on old technology and it's time for new technology. And at the beginning, people thought that we are really too far out there, that we are like speaking about things that will never happen. But then step by step, it did happen. We came with the first idea and we said, oh, plastic, marine litter, let's rename it. Let's call it ocean plastic. Let's give it value. Let's declare purpose, the new luxury, and say, if you're picking up a piece of plastic from a beach at the end of the world, then this piece of plastic has more value than a material that was just made in a factory, in a refinery or whatever, this moment. Like, so these reclaimed materials, with all the effort it takes to take them back, has higher value than new material. And that was a total paradigm shift, because before that, recycling was always seen as something of lower quality, lower value. And the recycling industry was seen as something that is more or less a very poor answer to this massively and fast increasing problem of pollution and production. And the same was with other topics. We moved them away from the shadows, from the swamps, from the outside areas of society into the core, confronting in a very inspiring way, but still confronting leaders of countries, of companies and big investors, firms even, but also youth, and showing them, listen, when you do something in your everyday life and you take an action and make a decision, you're probably not aware, but you're actually causing something out there. You're actually destroying with your everyday actions life out there, because you're supporting a design, you're supporting a standard that is not working out anymore. And that's what over time, over the 8 years, we saw a lot of people coming back to us and saying, back then when I first saw you guys, I felt you're totally stupid. You're naive. Like, how can you question such standards? That's just a given fact. And how can we even rethink these things that our society, our industry is built on? But now I see it happening. My own kids asking me to kind of recycle or not use plastic. And the strategies that we promoted, PolyAir, avoid, intercept, and redesign, suddenly people take it serious, you know? And even big organizations like World Bank or United Nations or governments, they suddenly say, there is an end-to-end solution for problems. Let's use it. Let's just not continue in the old ways.
You know, these problems have been on people's radar for a long time, obviously, with pollution and harm being done to our planet. I wonder, though, you talk about that top-down approach. You've worked with the United Nations, American Express, Adidas is a big one on the product side and innovation, and many others as well. But I wonder about, you know, how that top-down approach is working now. It sounds like and feels like all of this is a bit consumer-driven, even though those companies will be the ones that say, we make, you know, the most innovative running shoe or car or whatever it is. Where's that conversation now?
I mean, first of all, if you don't put something new in front of a consumer, you will never find out if they want it. You have to take that risk. And market research will never work for something that is not yet known. And Steve Jobs knew that very well. Apple wouldn't exist if they would have based their innovation and their product on market research. People can only compare things with what they already saw and they use. So at some point, you just have to put something new in front of them. And in order to prove a model and a concept, you have to do that. You have to take the risk. Otherwise, you are more or less condemned to stay in the abstract and you become a preacher. And that's why we started the partnership with Adidas in 2015, because we needed a partner, we needed a family member really that allows us to play around, that allows us to take risks really, and that would put the power of their brand behind it, which makes things real. And yes, the consumer was the first audience for products made with ocean plastic, but the competition was watching very closely. And trust me, there is not one minister out there of environment, of finances, even most of the presidents of countries, they know the project. And very, very often, the project has been used as a showcase by trend agencies, by design firms, by even internal people of organizations to kind of show that there is a way to deal with problems in a sexy way and that youth is reacting to it in a very positive way. We had to prove that our way of thinking actually works. And we had to prove that it's good for business. We had to prove that a product made from ocean plastic sells faster, competes better with competitors. And only then, when this became big enough, other companies would jump in. Suddenly you see Nike presenting sexy recycled shoes. Suddenly you see smaller firms like Everlane, or you see a lot of other brands jumping onto the bandwagon because they see actually the consumer demands it now. So what you do is you create by example a new standard. Instead of waiting for the laws to hit in, you're using more or less the power of competition, because if one company establishes the standard of going out of virgin plastic like Adidas now committed to, or going towards ocean plastic, or going towards biofabrication, that means, for example, growing leather for mushrooms or so, they're putting pressure on their whole industry category. And that's the role at Palais. We are looking for the champions that are willing to make a strong move and then define the new rules by just living it. And it's a very different approach than it was before, where the environmentalism movement was demanding change, otherwise they would embarrass and blame brands. It's the other way around. If you don't move, I hit you, I harm you, I hurt you. And here we're saying, hey, if you actually move, we're gonna reward you. You're gonna have better business. You're gonna be a leader. You're gonna be the future. You're gonna be a future brand. And that works totally the other way around and actually unleashes all the creative power of people, because fear is not such a good motivation. But the positive, the upside, the individual experience of like innovating something, that is so exciting for people. And it changes cultures. What we're seeing is that these companies we work with, we engage with, they totally change their way of thinking when it comes to materials, when it comes to product design, even when it comes to business models. Suddenly they're thinking like, why would we not actually rent out our product? Why would we always give it away? Why wouldn't we not keep owning it? Or why would we even use these ugly materials? Why do we actually define growth by increasing numbers of sales? Why wouldn't it be in like deepening our relationships with our customers? So this whole, like, I would say, injection of new into these organizations at some moment gains its own life and its own traction, and then it unleashes the true creative power, innovation power of these organizations, because technically they know it all. It's just about giving them the right framework and the encouragement to rethink things they have done for decades.
It's almost a double-pronged approach then, because you've got not only the motivation in big companies with the resources to change, but also the consumers get that feel-good factor, I guess, as well. I mean, I think the interesting thing—
But I want to say something about that, the feel-good factor. The truth is that consumers are not stupid anymore. They have learned to identify what is authentic and what not, especially the next generation. It's very difficult to bullshit them. And if a company just pulls a stunt, then that's a one-off, and everybody kind of sees that and reads that. You have to actually see that the company is continuously moving into the right direction and actually showing that in their overall behavior, not just with one product. And once this is happening, you start trusting them. And you can only achieve that as a company if you're actually living it. If change, and in our case, our strategy PolyAir, and the idea of like purpose is a new luxury, if that becomes the core DNA of a brand, if they really start forming their culture around it and taking it serious, and not just seeing it as a communication campaign or as a risk management piece. And that is how sustainability was anchored in organizations in the past. It was something that was very much outside focused. Like, how do we deal with criticism? How do we avoid that people see us in a bad light? While we are going totally introvert, we're saying we have to change the core understanding of how to make product, how to serve my customers, and how to play a responsible role in driving business to a new stage.
Talk to me about your role there in not only guiding that conversation, but I imagine it's also in showing the impact and what these actual changes in behavior do. How do you talk to your partners about that, about talking about the reduction of plastic or the impact in the actual oceans? How do you have that conversation at the same time?
First of all, it's important to engage and to truly understand what these companies are dealing with. And diving into their supply chains, diving into their culture, and confronting yourself, exposing yourself with the problems people that work in these companies experience every day. Otherwise, you're just like some visitor, you know, and you're not able to truly understand, and you're not able to truly communicate how solution can look like. And the second thing is that you want to create an understanding for what it actually is we are fighting for. You want to get these people into the water. You want to get the people into the sea. You want to get them underwater, actually, to meet these magic beings. And on the other side, not only experiencing the beauty, but also seeing the fragility firsthand, seeing how it looks when a whale cut off its fins, or how a bird has plastic in their belly and dies of it. I think to confront yourself with that sadness and the consequence of your everyday decisions as someone who works in such a company, who creates products that harm out there, is something that is very important, but in a good dose. So it's not like overwhelmingly frustrating and saddening. In a good dose where it's balanced out with the beauty and actually hope and encouragement that we can change these things. So we're doing a lot of workshops in organizations that can be on a beach, they can be on an island, it can be on an expedition boat. It can be that we're spending hours together or days. So we call that Palais Ocean School. And it happens pretty much nonstop, not during COVID-19, unfortunately, but before that and after that, it happens nonstop around the world. And we're doing that not only with the leaders of companies, but also with key people throughout the organization. And I think this inclusive approach is very important. This is not a problem that we can solve in an elitist way. It's not a problem that only a CEO or a shareholder of a company can resolve. These complex issues that we're facing today, they ask for collaboration. They ask for everybody to participate and everybody to understand deeply that they have a role to play, even if they don't see that they have, because often people don't see that they have a say. They feel that they're overwhelmed and not being heard. And that is something that is not correct, because often the middle management or even the consumer is well observed and the voice is being heard and actions actually have consequences there.
We began by talking a little bit about design thinking and actually perhaps reclaiming the idea of innovation. Talk to me a little bit more about how you incubate that and actual progress in material science and things like that.
Yeah, first of all, I want to start with the role of the designer, really. The designer always had this role of like being a collaborator or a collaboration enabler, because you don't get your product made in the way you're thinking if you don't convince all the participants to collaborate with you. You have to understand the technology, you have to understand the feasibility, you have to understand prices, you have to understand a lot to come to a point that your product, under all these preconditions and circumstances, is still a good product. That forces you to speak a universal language, because you have to kind of interact with experts that often are closed up in a silo. And in order to break that, you have to inspire them with a vision and invite them on a journey which you can't actually successfully complete alone. And that unites the designer with the artist. The artist actually is even more extreme with that, because the artist often doesn't have the restriction that a designer has and doesn't have to fulfill a mission. So the artist actually is the perfect collaboration enabler, because she or he can play with a very open, transparent agenda and say, this is what I want to do, this is my dream. And people feel liberated by that, because suddenly they don't have to deliver something that has to make commercial value or has to be feasible or has to work in big scale. It's a beautiful detour. And the artist can more or less be very open about everything, because the ultimate output will be something everybody will enjoy. And therefore we find that collaborating in the art world and inviting people into the art world is a very beautiful starting point for a conversation, because you visit an artist, you meet an artist, and you're going into a space of art with an open mind, full of expectation to be surprised. And you don't really have a predefined opinion. And that's very rare. And that's also why we are forming so many partnerships with contemporary artists.
I would be remiss not to ask you about what we might see coming up from Parlay. There are some amazing collaborations, but talk to me about what we might see from Parlay just going forward.
So yes, the art collaboration on Vortec, download the app, and there is the Parlay Collective. That's big support for us, and it helps us to continue with our work. And the label on that whole endeavor is Material Revolution. So we're gonna grow now our ocean plastic program into a global rollout, and our vision is that we hopefully in the near future will operate in every country with the coastline on this planet and make sure that these different pillars of educating people, communicating, but also intercepting this trash on rivers, on beaches, upcycling it and offering it as an alternative of replacing virgin plastic. But then also getting these countries behind us when it comes to new materials, changing their laws and giving tax incentives for biofabricated materials, green chemistry. This will all roll out now. And our partnership with World Bank is crucial for that, because they committed to us on eye level to implement our strategy AIR, avoid, intercept, and redesign, already in South Asia, with 8 countries in South Asia, and then moving towards Southeast Asia, and then moving to other regions. And that is of immense support, because they're opening for us doors to the governments, to the local industries, and forming not only a global collaboration network, but also a local collaboration network. So Palais has now to figure out how to grow and to kind of organize itself, but still stay integral and stay agile, you know, and not becoming too big of an organization itself. So the Ocean Plastic Program has delivered a proof of concept. It's an end-to-end solution, and we believe that we can end marine plastic pollution. It will take time, though, because we are still so addicted to plastic. And we are flanking this with a very strong program around future materials, alternative materials, because we can reduce the consumption of plastic, we can reduce the leakage of plastic waste, but we will not be able to totally end it before we have replacements. And therefore, we need new materials. And there is a very strong arm growing of Palais now towards supporting material innovators and bringing innovators together with investors and lawmakers and creating form of eco-innovation boost through collaboration. That these are the two big frontiers that we are right now at Palais working on, getting the old material plastic under control as best as we can, and also working on replacement of that.
So fascinating, and it will be amazing to watch. Cyril, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate this, and hopefully next time we can get an update in person. Thank you very much.
I would love that. Thank you for taking time on your side.
Cyril Gutsch there, founder of Parlay for the Oceans. You can learn more about their work at parlay.tv, where you'll also find details about the Parlay Collective virtual art exhibition we mentioned in partnership with Vortec.
That's all for this week. My thanks to Cyril and to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. And don't forget to have a listen to The Spirit Lives On, a brand new mini-series brought to you in collaboration with our sponsors, Longines. The show is airing in place of our sister show, Eureka, for 5 weeks, exploring the lives of some fearless aviators whose thirst for adventure was pivotal in developing air travel into what it is today. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.